At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Well, hello and welcome back to Reality TV. This week on the show, we're going to be talking about 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way, TLC's Unexpected. It was an unexpected great couple episodes that I caught up on. If Teen Mom is up your alley, you better be watching Unexpected. And if you hate Teen Mom, Unexpected is like the better version of it. So make sure you're watching it so you can get in on all the cringy madness that we'll be talking about. And of course, we can't forget about the new season of Love After Lockup. This new season is just checking all the boxes for me, much like Lacey's prison boyfriend, not to be confused with her prison fiancé. Now, before we jump into the shallow end of the news, gotta take care of some housekeeping. I know you all love that phrase, but listen, it's what it is. We all have things that we need to tend to. First of that being my major gratitude towards my newest Patreon subscribers, Renee, Jody, Maggie, and Amber. You're in for an incredible bonus episode this week for your first episode. Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom and I are going to be talking about all things Teen Mom OG, the amazing Jonathan. Oh, I take that back. It's Jonathan the Amazing. That is the Hulu documentary. I have some very strong opinions about it. I know Amanda does too, but we have not talked about it because we're going to probably fight each other out. And we are also going to be talking about the movie Rocket Man. This is Elton John's biopic. Is that what you call it? The movie on his childhood and adolescence. I stayed up late last night and, oh, well, I'll save it for Patreon. I have some very strong opinions on that film. I know, surprise, surprise. Normally I'm such a meek and mild girl. I don't have much of an opinion or things to talk about. That is at patreon.com/realityvpod. Coming up this week on Moms on the Rocks, Carrie and I are back. Make sure you check out a great episode. We're talking about some trivia, what generation should you have been born in, and lots of other stuff. So head on over there. That's Moms on the Rocks and Total Request Podcast this week. On Friday, you are going to hear a recap of the first 2 episodes of the iconic Being Bobby Brown docuseries. Oh yeah, Amanda and I are bringing all the Bobby, that's love, to you. That's at patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. That's coming up this Friday. But now let's dive into the shallow end of the news. We're going very shallow here for a moment because trust me when I tell you, I was digging deep for anything lighthearted in the wake of Dorian. Those of you who are in Dorian's path or are in any sort of even inconvenience because of it, and if that's the least of it, let's be grateful. Just know we're all thinking about you. Check out your local Red Crosses for donation centers. And, you know, I'm not an expert on this, but listen, we're all thinking about you. We're praying for you. We're sending good energy your way. Hang in there, and Dorian, fuck off. Okay, now with that out of the way, let's talk about what I could find because there's not a whole lot of juicy, dirty gossip going on. But I did find a little item that I started getting really fired up about, and I was going to go off on Sharon Osbourne because I was looking over my UK Daily Mail, and Sharon Osbourne started this media blast against Simon Cowell. And there's this whole article about how she's blasting him for his veneers and his weight loss and his plastic surgery. And I started thinking, all right, Sharon, who are you to talk about people getting plastic surgery and losing weight and all this kind of stuff? Because she's been very open about the fact that she's had nips and tucks and I think she had like gastric bypass. And I'm the kind of person where if you feel like you want to do something to make yourself feel better and you're doing it in a responsible way, do what you want to do. I don't care. But don't be a hypocrite about it. And that's what I thought Sharon Osbourne was doing and being until I looked at the picture that she was referring to. Simon Cowell. Okay, I'm going to pull up this photo here and I will post it in the Facebook group. Let me describe what he looks like. His head is an actual rectangle. It is fully rectangle between his hair and where his neck attaches to his face. It's a very odd angle. His body is slim, like he looks good, but it just doesn't look in proportion to his head. But it gets worse. His eye lift that he has seems to have settled, which is fine. It looks much better than whatever he had done, whether it was Botox or eye lift, whatever. So that has settled, but he got these teeth, and I'm putting like a question mark there because I'm not even fully certain that these are actual teeth. They look like poster board that someone drew gray lines on and then shoved the entire poster board in his mouth. It looks insane. He doesn't even look human. I'm going to post it, take a look at it, and then I think we can all agree with Sharon Osbourne. Whatever he has done, it's not looking right. Maybe we need to just stain up his teeth a little bit, make sure that he's drinking some more coffee, tea, bourbon, whiskey, something that is very dark in color to tone down the whiteness. It's very Ross from Friends turning off the lights and the black lights go on, but it's in full daylight. So check that out. And now my favorite item in the news that I saw this week. This is from Radar Online. And I know it's not the highest integrity of journalism, but trust me, you're going to love this one. Our one and only Gypsy Rose Blanchard is engaged. And guess what? The wedding is back on. Phew. I know we were all losing sleep over this because she had a brief split from her fiance. And now I'm going to be quoting Radar Online here. I don't want to plagiarize. You all know who I'm talking about. I'm going to be quoting Radar Online here, giving them the love that they deserve for this article. The Jailbird is giving new details about their steamy romance, intimate relationship, and future. Speaking exclusively to E! News, Gypsy, now 27, wrap your mind around that, Gypsy Blanchard is 27, she revealed her relationship with husband-to-be Ken. Oh, just like the Barbie. They started dating back in 2017 when he sent her a letter to prison after watching the HBO documentary, Mommy, Dead and Dearest. Well, I mean, who wouldn't fall in love with Gypsy after watching that documentary? He must be very healthy. He's got a really good head on his shoulders. Gypsy wrote him back, and it didn't take long before they began writing each other on a weekly basis. Crazy that she found time to do that. I mean, in her busy schedule and the clink. Soon the letters turned to phone calls. We would spend hours on the phone. I talked to him like I had known him my whole life and vice versa. It wasn't too late after that that I sent him a visitation form to come and visit me. He came and it was kind of a funny story, but within the first 30 minutes, he leaned over and gave me the most wonderful kiss of my whole life, said Gypsy.
Really is a funny story, isn't it? Oh my God, I murdered my mom. I'm here in prison. He kissed me. Oh, the romance.
She added that while physical contact is nearly prohibited in prison visitation rooms, their chemistry was instantaneous and they couldn't hold back. Crazy, right? I mean, normally she has such amazing self-control. The level of physical contact that is allowed is limited to holding hands in a brief hug and a closed mouth kiss.
But the kiss he gave me was quite passionate. I looked at him and I was like, I don't even know that you liked me like that.
And he said,
yeah, I have for a while.
And I'm like, I have for a while too.
Now remember, Gypsy is serving a 10-year prison sentence and she's got some insecurities because of that. I mean, who wouldn't, right? You're back in the dating scene, you're in prison. At the end of the day, Gypsy's just a girl standing behind bars asking a boy to love her. She said,
you don't want to start a relationship when you have X amount of years in prison. It seems a little unfair to the other person.
God, you guys, she is like the next Patty, what the hell's her name? Patty Stanger. After pleading guilty to second-degree murder in June 2015 for stabbing her mother, Dee Dee Blanchard, Gypsy's serving 10 years. She said her mother abused her for years. We knew that.
I'm not going to go through the whole past thing, but despite all of that,
Ken has been extremely understanding and has made it clear that he's in it for the long run. He was like, I just want to support you in your life, and I'm the first girl that he ever told I love you to.
How does she know that for sure? Unless she's done some deep dive Googling like that I'm able to do outside of a prison, I'm going to doubt that story. Gypsy, however, has already met her fiancé's mother, and her dad and her stepmother have met Ken. They're all very supportive.
Christy and Ken have been Facebook friends for 2 years now. Ever since I started talking with Ken, I told Christy, hey, friend this guy on Facebook. We're really good friends right now. They've known each other for a while.
Gypsy even added that her father met Ken during a prison visit, and her father gave him his blessing to marry his daughter. Speaking of their engagement, Gypsy said Ken proposed to her during a visit in October. Ooh, let's hear all the details, girl. They had spoken about it previously, so it didn't come as a surprise. At the time, Ken gave her a silver band, which was unfortunately confiscated in prison. Gypsy, come on, girl. You shove that thing up your butt and you get it inside. Have you not seen jailbirds? Well, she probably hasn't, but come on. If you are a jailbird, everyone knows you get things in and out of prison through your butt. After that, they planned to wed in the prison visitation room. Ugh, so idyllic. She said they were hoping for a simple January 2020 ceremony, but now
we're unsure of when it'll happen or where.
Her father would rather they get married once she's released. God, what an asshole. It's not your wedding, man. Speaking of what she'd like her ideal post-prison release wedding to look like, Gypsy said,
I think I envision what every woman envisions her wedding to be.
Oh, shit, this is going to be good.
I've always wanted it in my mind, an outdoor ceremony, possibly in a gazebo.
Well, I think we know a DJ named Doug down in wherever the hell Angela from 90 Day Fiancé lives that would love to accommodate her requests. Gypsy also is requesting for bridal magazines. She wants Ken to bring them to her, and she also is addicted to Say Yes to the Dress. As for what she wants her dress to look like, Gypsy said,
I don't want a poofy dress. I think I want something pretty, but not too much. Silky with probably a lot of bling. I don't need to pull off anything too long. I'm short, pushing 5 foot, so something simple yet elegant will do.
Okay, Your Majesty. She's also hoping to have 2 or 3 children with her future husband. Well, that'll make for an even better made-for-TV movie. But for now, as she awaits her release, Gypsy's focusing on finishing her GED, working as the prison photographer. Let's get on this one. And planning her nuptials.
I would just like to say that Ken and I are happily engaged, and he's not only my fiancé, but my best friend as well. He brings nothing but love and positivity to my life, and I look forward to what the future holds for us together.
Well, I smell a future Love After Lockup in the making, and with that, let's get into this week's Love After Lockup. Two words all together now. I'm talking about Cheryl and Josh. Turd burglar. You could also go with Ziploc sperm. Either one of those, if you knew what I was talking about, we're best friends. You know, it would have been funny if Cheryl weren't a mother raising future citizens of America. I mean, she's raising future voters, you guys. What kind of adult is laughing that the love of their life refers to them as exclusively turd burglar? That's not a nickname. That is a threat. My first reaction was to think, okay, Cheryl's an idiot because he's probably using pet names so he doesn't have to mess up multiple prison pen pals. But no, Cheryl is just dumb enough that she might just be, in fact, burgling turds to Josh in prison. Now, the sperm bag comment, I have heard and seen a lot of things being smuggled in through the butt. Remember, we're talking about a Gypsy Blanchard's ring there. But a baggie of sperm? Think about the steps it took for Josh to get that to her. Where did he get the Ziploc bag? When did he fill the bag? And where did he put the bag in order to get it into the visitation room, out of, I'm guessing, his butt, and into her hand? Is she holding a poopy sperm bag? I mean, the whole thing is just too much to wrap my head or butthole around. And somehow Cheryl knows the shelf life on sperm, but yet that doesn't hold her back from letting Josh spread his sperm all over a borrowed motel blanket. How dare she? You know, if you're going to have sex in the middle of the woods or whatever you're planning on doing, why don't you bring your own sex blanket? You freaking monster. She's a germ-spreading, sperm-collecting, sperm-spreading monster. Now, let's meet Josh. He's a lot taller than I expected. He's very Christmas elf-like, very jolly, not in width, but in ruby red cheeks. His face is very childlike, claymation style, joyful, which we all know. Listen, I know we've all seen Dateline. We've seen plenty serial killer documentaries. When they look very childlike and innocent, it really means he's either a sadistic motherfucker or he's going to be finding God and he's going to become a fundamentalist Mormon preacher and collect several wives. All right, so who is next? Oh, let's go with Vincent and Amber because there's really not a lot to say. Let's just knock these two out of the way. They're not going to be knocking boots anytime soon because what it comes down to is Vincent is an idiot who doesn't see that Amber is clearly not into him nor men in general, in my opinion. Let's talk about Angela and Tony, because my God, the editors of this show are so mean. They cut to Angela's first scene in this hyper close-up right after they were zoomed in on Lacey and Shane, who we're going to talk about in a second. It was clearly a little before and after meme, just placed right in our laps. Now, these two are just sad to watch, and I don't even like Angela. I'm going to lay that out there. I don't enjoy her. She's an idiot. She's doing this to herself. But remember when she went for that tasting at a wedding reception venue? They placed it in our laps like we were going to be seeing updates and then we're going to be on the next season, and then they just ghosted us. Well, Angela is still on that same high that we were on. The last she's thinking, the last we're thinking, they're a hot and heavy couple. He's going to be getting released and they're going to eat their mac and cheese with sun-dried tomatoes very soon. Oh my God, that sounds disgusting. So she's ready to just get it on with Tony. He's just been released. I feel terrible for her. He keeps pushing off her repeated offers of a blowjob, and somehow he got Angela to say thank you for him shutting her down. That is some expert mind fucking right there. Now, all of a sudden, Tony, who was talking all dirty to Angela during that aforementioned tasting, he's now the moral compass of the relationship, okay? A few years of dating behind bars, you get steak and potatoes. Let's think of this almost like baseball, the baseball analogy. First base, second base, first base. Sit on the same side of the booth and watch each other eat asparagus and steak. Second base, talk about maybe getting married. Third base, that'll be dessert and maybe I'll let you touch my leg. I feel badly for Angela. I was wishing for her to give him a blowjob. That's how messed up the situation is. He could not get out of that car fast enough, and I know she's an idiot. I shouldn't feel badly for her. But I do. I also feel like she needs a really good Pond's wipe to get that under eye eyeliner off. It's not a good look, and that's going to hurt when she scrubs her face. It's going to get in her eyes. She's probably going to get an eye infection. I think even at one point, she went to kiss him, and he just patted her face goodbye, like a tap, 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 move your face away. It was terrible. Poor Ange, Ange. We need Angela and Angela from 90 Day Fiancé and Michael. These two need to team up and take the show on the road. A real Thelma and Louise crossover. All right, on to our love triangle. Lacey, Shane, and John. First things first, this prison entrance sign. It was quite charming. I think this is in Virginia. Virginia, if I didn't know any better, I think you were trying to recruit elementary school students with those apples atop of your sign. Are they just recycling old school signs now and using them for prisons? is the apple the state fruit or something? I don't get it. Someone on Instagram or Twitter went after me and they were like, why are you making fun of the sign? Why should people in the community have to drive by the prison every day, and this is their quote, be raped by sight of the prison sign? So let me just be clear here. I'm not saying a prison sign needs to have a photo of naked prisoners being whipped and belted or whatever the hell, okay? I'm just saying that apples atop a prison sign is an interesting choice. It made Lacey look like she's the single hot mom dropping her kid off at school, and all the moms in the grocery getter minivans are just lining up to side-eye her because, yeah, that's what we do. Let's be honest, we're jealous and we're wondering how they have the time and the money to keep their shit tight. All right, way to go, Lacey. Whatever you're doing, it's working for you. And I wish I had a nice little butt that stuck out a little bit. Maybe not that much, but my flat ass, I would not be able to pull off those white jeans. It would just look like I was wearing a sheet for Halloween. I'm a ghost basically standing outside of a prison. Now, you know what else is tight, unlike my ass? The space between teeth in Shane's mouth. I'm not going to say Shane is ugly. Okay, he's fine. He has a prison bod, you know, like the muscular upper body comes to a point at the feet. Lots of pull-up circuits available in the clink, not so much for the lower body. But Lacey thinks he's super hot, and that's all that's important. I just don't think that he is as hot as she thinks. There's a reason he mumbles. It's because he's hiding his little teeth, and that's a good thing. They're both hiding things, though, right? Lacey's hiding her cheating, and not very well. It doesn't even seem like she minds that Shane is overhearing what's going on. I think she's more afraid of John than she is of Shane, probably because I really think Shane is probably like 19. Did they say how old he was? Hold on, let me look at my notes here. No, I don't have written down how old Shane is. He just looks young. And again, maybe it's his teeth. He just has like a very immature baby face. But back to Lacey. I don't like Lacey as a person. And I'm not talking about her profession. If that's how she makes money and she makes good money doing it, she can support her kids. Go and do what you're going to do. But I think she's gross because just like men who cheat on their partners and they gaslight their various partners, that's what Lacey does. She makes John think that he's going crazy because he clearly suspects that she's cheating. And she's saying, no, you're the crazy one. That's not a good person to be cheating on two different people and then play victim in the middle. I can't stand it. It's very Michael, Sarah, Megan, where now Michael is the victim because Megan might be talking to his friend. It's such bullshit. So screw Lacey. Let's go on to Lizzie and Daniel. Daniel and Tyler Baltierra from Teen Mom, I'm convinced they are cousins because Daniel's mom looks exactly like Tyler's mom, Kim. They have the exact same attitude, kind of the same nosiness. You know, they stick their nose into their son's business. And Lizzie is, I don't like her. She's not Lacey level, but she's sneaky like that. She's all pissy because Daniel's mom is kind of skeptical of her, but damn it. I mean, I would be too if some girl said she was in love with my son, but the entire 3 years that he's away in prison, she doesn't visit him once. You don't mean to tell me there's one day in 3 years you couldn't make it there? And I also would not let some girl carpool with me and play roomies in a hotel. I don't like it. If you want to play house and have your reunion be all exciting, then do that when we get back from prison on release day. You don't have to be doing that on my own dime. Something about Lizzie is just not sincere. Like, we're missing some part of the story. Last week when I was watching her change, this is going to sound very anti-feminist of me, but I thought she looked a little pregnant. Like there was a little pregnancy belly there. It could have just been her sweatshirt and her coat, the way it was bunched up. But I thought maybe she's hiding a secret pregnancy. Like she's early on in a pregnancy. He doesn't know yet. There's something we're missing overall. I don't know. I really hope it's not a baby, but there's something fishy about it. And the fact that she was annoyed that she spent $300 on phone calls over the course of 3 years, that means she has spent less talking to Daniel than like one of those things where you send in money for animals or your little adoptive kids. Who was that? Sally Struthers? Is that right? Sally Struthers, Christian Children's Foundation, Christian Children's Network. Oh my God, I gotta look that up. Where was I? Oh, right. Okay, so they're driving to go see Daniel on his release day. We finally get to see Daniel in prison, and he does this little, like, prison head, shoulders, knees, and toes dance where he shows us where all of his different tattoos are. One of them on his knuckles, and it said, "Love Sick" or something, and then a little stick figure of a girl blowing her brains out with a gun. This is his wording. Very romantic. And then another one with a boy slitting his throat. And this is the guy that Lizzie is waiting 3 years for. They're both delusional. Anyhow, Lizzie is excited to see him, and she just hopes that he doesn't think she's fat. What is the world coming to when a young woman is going to school working full-time, has a prison boyfriend, and she's worried about him thinking she's fat? I know I keep waffling back and forth between who I like, I'm dissing him, and I'm then feeling badly for him, but we really have got to get to a better place where we are not hung up on if I look fat or not. If Dave were getting released from prison and he came out and was like, "Oh, you gained weight," here go hell come. They better get a prison jumpsuit ready for me right there. We'd be trading places. He would be released. They'd throw me right in for his murder. It would not end well. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, have a word from my sponsor, and then we'll be back with Unexpected and 90 Day Fiancé The Other Way. We all love our reality TV, and I know that's all I'm watching at night when I finally get a chance to relax. But I can't be a total Paul or Angela and not know what is going on in the world. The Newsworthy is the perfect daily podcast that keeps you up to date with everything you need to know in 10 minutes or less. Host Erica Mandy is a veteran journalist who gets to the point without taking sides and keeps it fun, fair, and fast. She's not going with alarmist headlines or boring Dow Jones indexes. Is that even a thing? See? She just delivers what we need and what we want to know. From weather to politics to entertainment news, The Newsworthy has it all in one place. Join me and thousands of people listening each weekday by searching The Newsworthy wherever you listen to podcasts or go to thenewsworthy.com to check it out. All right, let's start with Unexpected, and I'm going to build my way up to Michaela and Kalen because I'm going to lose my goddamn shit and I'm probably going to lose my voice. Let's knock out some of these boring storylines from this past episode. Let's talk about Ryla and Anthony first. Anthony lives with his mom and her boyfriend, Marcos. They're playing basketball. I really like this guy. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's probably a great stepdad. Now, Anthony's family is skeptical of Ryla's story because Anthony and Ryla were on a break, much like Ross and Rachel. And during that break, she slept with another guy. And right around that same time, she got pregnant. So there's this question of paternity, which I thought there was a test for now prenatally, like before the baby's born, you can do some kind of test. But who knows? It's probably not covered with insurance and all that kind of stuff. I have a feeling it is his baby. I hope it is, honestly, because that'd be really messed up if it's not. That'd be very hard for a young guy to go through. Yeah, you're going to be dad. Yeah, you're not. But, you know, that's what you get when you are having unprotected sex. All right, Tyra and Alex. This whole family really confuses me. I want to like them, but then I also cringe because there's just so many generations of teen moms and dads in and out. It's a sad situation, really, especially Alex's mom and dad and his grandparents. So they've had the baby, or Tyra has given birth to the baby. Little baby girl, Layla Rose, she's adorable. She's chunky. I want to squeeze her. And Alex, I really, really like this kid. He's sitting next to Tyra and she's pumping. She's trying to get this breast pump to work. He's not even flinching. You know, if you can sit next to your girlfriend and see her nipple being sucked to crazy lengths, that's love. In the great words of Whitney Houston in Being Bobby Brown, that's love. That's love. I'm not the only one rooting for these two, right? I actually really, really like Alex. Tyra's immature, but I really hope these two stick together just for the sake of that sweet little chunky baby. All right, Chloe and Max. Well, jury is back in session, and I still hate Max. He and his dad go to Ava's baptism. Chloe's parents gave very clear instructions that they did not want to have any interaction with Max or his dad that day. But Max's dad made this little comment when Jessica's family was leaving the church, and he said something like, "Oh, have a nice day." So Jessica takes this as an attack and thinks they only came to stir shit up. I don't agree with this. They're both to blame. Jessica and her husband clearly like to have a little drama going on. They don't like Max. They don't trust Max. And I understand that because I don't either. I hate this kid. And I do think his dad probably said it to get under their skin, but not to the extent that they made it out to be. Like, they only came to stir up shit. No, they came to see the baby get baptized. Now, Chloe and her best friend, Maggie, are meeting up at what looks like an Asian restaurant, which is why it pissed me off when Chloe orders a burger with no condiments on the side. There's no lettuce, onion, tomato, just a dry burger, piece of cheese, bun. Her friend orders a quesadilla. No rice, no beans. What the fuck kind of restaurant is this? If it is an Asian restaurant, well, okay, it comes with the territory. If it's a normal gastropub kind of place, it should be closing down soon because that food was offensive. Also offensive to all of my senses, Max's dumb Caillou face. I realize I'm being mean, but is Caillou also being a selfish little twerp in every scene that he's in? Yeah, so he deserves all the snark he's going to get from me. Good old Max. He's smarter than Jessica and her husband, right? Chloe's family is just a big old group of idiots. This kid doesn't think that taking illegal prescription drugs is doing drugs because, first of all, it's a prescription, not his own. And also, it's not doing drugs because it's just one drug. It's all semantics. I have my arms up raised in the air, by the way, because he... Oh my God, I can't stand this kid. He's like that asshole who distracts from anything that he's doing wrong, distracts from his faults by playing devil's advocate, or like he's the grammar police now. So instead of arguing the point of things, he goes for the details. I don't do drugs. I take a pill. That's not drugs. That's one thing. Drugs means that there's more than one thing. Whatever. Shut the fuck up. You do drugs. You need therapy. And finally, Chloe starts saying the right thing to Max. No, I'm not going to play happy little family and wait for you if you go mess up and go to jail again. And that's the part that I like about Jessica. I do think she can be annoying. She's a drama queen, but I also think she's a good mom. She's instilled that in Chloe, and Chloe has taken that in. She's probably heard it 1,000 times from her mom. And I like that part. I like that Chloe's being a hard ass about that and being truthful with Max. Although Chloe does play both sides, right? She likes that Max is a bad boy. She will stir up shit with Max and his dad, get them fired up, saying that her parents are big meanies. But then she's going to move out with Max when she turns 18, and she expects her parents to be totally fine with it. Like, she's not going to bring it up to them out of nowhere because she doesn't want to ruin their day. But she'll tell them, and then they'll just have to deal with it, right? She plays both sides because if they're going to be mean to her about it, she's going to tell Max. And then when Max and his dad fuck up and Max says stupid stuff like, "You're going to wait for me if I go to jail," she'll tell her parents that, and she wants their sympathy. She's, I guess, young and spoiled and doesn't know any different. And speaking of spoiled, I should probably get my hands on one of Max's Xanaxes before I launch into this, because we're talking about Michaela. Little background before I lose my shit. The last couple episodes, we found out that Michaela went to the hospital because she really needed some attention. And, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, she thought she was in labor at 32 weeks. Let's remember, Michaela was the one who was Googling ways to induce labor, which is not only stupid, it's dangerous at 32 weeks. She did that a couple weeks ago. Remember, she was talking to Tiny Tim in the kitchen. He said, "What are you doing?" And she said she was looking up ways to induce labor with castor oil. So yeah, 32 weeks, she thinks she's in labor. 2 months early, 2 months early. Michaela is addicted to attention. That is her drug of choice. She's going to create drama. And then when that doesn't satisfy her, she doesn't get what she needs from it, she goes the medical route. Very Munchausen-y, okay? Allegedly. You pull the I don't feel good, I need medical attention route, and everyone's going to drop everything for you. That's what Michaela is doing. We all know people like that. You know, it's cool and it feels good when all these people are fawning over you. You're pregnant, you're getting attention from nurses. And look at Cindy. She's loving it too. Don't think for a second that Cindy feels put out. And you know, Michaela's loving it not only because she's getting attention, but she's getting a break from little Timmy. So she gets to rag on Kaylin, why he's not there. She doesn't have to watch her kid because someone's at home taking care of the baby, which she's always complaining about that she's so tired from. So why is Kaylin not there? Well, let me stretch out for this one. Kaylin's back at the house that you, Michaela, wanted to rent together, where you were going to raise your two kids before you ran back home to grandma and grandpa because you don't like being alone. You don't like the monotony of being an actual grown-up like the rest of us with a partner who also helps you take care of the kids that you chose to have and be pregnant with. Not once, but twice. Remember last season when Michaela was dying to get married? She could not get married fast enough, and then she quickly changed her mind. That's the same thing that she did when she had this house. But Cindy and Tim and Michaela love to make it out that it's Kaylin's fault. So why isn't Kaylin here at the hospital? He should be here. He doesn't care if he misses the birth of his daughter. How dare he? What kind of father is he? Well, come to find out, no, that's not the case. Kaylin says this is what Michaela does. She goes to the hospital and they send her home. This is not the first time she's done this. She did the same thing with Timmy. So Kaylin asks Michaela repeatedly and also asks her mom, Shannon, and her grandma, is she in labor? Are they telling you that it is time to give birth? Do I need to come right now? I will be there as soon as my landlord leaves. Now, he doesn't rush over because he knows Michaela is full of shit. He's got her number. He knows how she is. He doesn't want to piss off his landlord who, you know, he's paid money to. He'll probably lose money if he doesn't meet them. He can't just blow off his landlord, rush over in a snowstorm, especially if they're just going to be leaving the hospital, sending her home. And what's he going to do if he rushes over there? Just watch her lay in bed for nothing? But of course, Kaylin is a good kid, or he's a good young man. He's a good father. Even though he and Michaela are kind of on the outs or they're figuring out their relationship, of course he wants to be there for the birth of his daughter. So he gets over there, and what do you know? Michaela's not in labor. They're sending her home. He was right all along. But Cindy and Michaela can't help themselves. They gotta flip that fucking script and keep insisting that Kaylin's the bad guy. We didn't tell you that you needed to come. That's up to you. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do, Kaylin. We didn't say anything. You know, any way that they can manipulate the narrative to make Kaylin look like the asshole. So now here we are. We have Michaela back with her grandparents at their house, and Kaylin's coming over to see his son. You know, like a good dad does, that Kaylin has said over and over, we're seeing it. So whatever bullshit that Tim and Cindy are saying he doesn't come over, really, because we're seeing that he does. But sure enough, Cindy and Tim are talking shit about Kaylin, saying that he doesn't want to see him and they don't understand why. Well, let's talk about that. What would Kaylin be doing during the day? Gee, he's paying rent on a house that Michaela moved out of. Oh, I know. He's working all day. His son lives with you assholes. So, of course, he doesn't want to spend every waking minute that he's not working to support his kid and baby on the way and pay rent on that house that Michaela wanted and changed her mind on and the dogs that Michaela wanted and then changed her mind on, all these different things. Kaylin obviously wants to be with his family. He wants to be with his kids. He just doesn't want to be with them in your house. Tim and Cindy, I'm talking to them like one-on-one right now. It's really not that hard to understand. I just want Tim and Cindy to tell the truth. They want Michaela all to themselves. They don't want Kaylin in the picture at all. They want to make themselves be heroes. I can't stand either one of them. And now we know why Shannon turned out the way she did, because look at two enablers for parents. This dinner with Queen Shelley and Kaylin. First of all, Kaylin needs to get credit where credit is due. He keeps his calm, and even though he called Tim bro, he could have called him a lot worse. He keeps such a level head. I don't think I've ever seen anyone so calm and collected. Look at me. I can't even keep my words straight. I'm stuttering right now because I'm so pissed off for him. He's a good guy. Now, why did Michaela get up and run away from the table? Because she knows she's now stuck between the two stories that she's making up. She's telling Kaylin and Queen Shelley something, and then she's telling Shannon and her grandparents something else. And if anyone at that table that should have snapped to attention and thought, huh, maybe Kaylin is right, it should have been Shannon. Because Michaela did the same thing with Shannon. Remember, she was going to move in with Shannon and, oh yeah, we're going to live together in this house, and then blew her off. She did the same thing to Kaylin. So that should have rung quite similar to Shannon, but of course it doesn't. Shannon has selective memory. I love when they cut to the videotape of Shannon saying, don't rush to the hospital. She might not even be giving birth tonight. Don't worry about it. Tell Kaylin not to worry about coming. And here she is at the table like, I have the text messages. I can show you. I would have taken that meatball that Shelley put on the plate. I would have taken that meatball instead of throwing it on Shannon's plate. I would have shoved it up her ass so fucking hard it would have come out her nose. Tim and Cindy, I mean, the fall from grace those two have gone through. They're the worst. The worst enablers. Oh, God. You think that they would have learned after they see what they fucked up with in their parenting with Shannon, and now they're doing it with Michaela. Michaela's a spoiled little brat, and she's so desperate for attention. It's always going to be something. If she's not pregnant, she's going to be planning a wedding. If she's not planning a wedding, she's going to be pregnant. Same thing we saw last season. It's going to be a house, a boyfriend, a fiance, something with Shannon. She just doesn't want to do the work. She's lazy, but she wants to have the atta girls, the backpats for being such a good mom. She's doing it all on her own. No, she's not. And another thing that I thought was really interesting was when Kaylin showed up at Grandma Cindy and Grandpa Tim's house. Timmy's got a diaper. He goes to change a diaper, and Cindy calls for Tim to watch little Timmy. Does she call for Michaela, his mother, to come and get him? No, calls for Grandpa Tim. So why do you think Michaela loves living there? Oh, so she can kick back and relax and be a normal, 18-year-old, however old she is. You're a mom, get off your ass. And sometimes being a mom is being lonely in a house, taking care of your kids all day. That's what you signed up for. Ooh, all right. Anyone have that Xanax around? Pass it this way. I'm kidding, you guys. I actually don't have Xanax. That would probably be a very slippery slope. I have vodka instead. All right, let's go on to 90 Day Fiancé the other way. My God, I love this show. It's the perfect way to start an amazing week of TV. All right, Corey. I mean, there's really no way around this. Corey's dad died, complications from pancreatitis at 62 years old. Nothing more I'm going to say on it, but it's a terrible, horrible thing to go through. Thoughts and prayers with his family. That sucks. My heart broke for him sitting right there. I think Evelyn could have been a little more affectionate and sympathetic, but maybe she keeps her emotions close to her heart if there is one in there. Okay, moving on quickly to Jihoon and Devin. Devin and that dreamy little chubby baby. They've arrived in South Korea, and we find out that Drusilla was left back at home with her parents until Devin gets settled. I think that's a great idea. And oh, what's that? Oh, you hear that huge thank you? That's coming from the entire flight and crew on that flight to South Korea. Can you even imagine? For any parent, by the way, not just because Drusilla might be on the more precocious side, traveling with an infant and a toddler has got to be hell for a mom or a dad or grandparent, anyone traveling with little ones. It's not worse for anyone except you. Now, Jihoon, he continues to disappoint. He's running late. He fucks up the car seat. And then there's that little detail about not having a place for them to live yet. not only does he not even have a place, there is not even a solid plan or even a loose plan for what he is going to do. He wants Devin and the baby and himself to stay with his parents for a few months while he gets his shit together. I don't have a good feeling about Ji-hoon at all for the future now. I just don't trust him. You know, if you're the type of person that can lie and then ask for forgiveness with like a cute little smile and a little man boy thing, I mean, what else is he going to think that he can get away with by doing the same thing? You know, if he had enough money to dye his hair, then he should have had enough money to start saving to put aside for an apartment or at least an extended stay motel. That tiny little apartment for five people. Ji-hoon, come on. Just like Devin said, you had at least 9 to 10 months to plan this whole thing. You could have pulled something else together. Now, this illegal activity that he's talking about, I think it could be two things. One, it could be, you know, drugs or something. Maybe he sells pot like Jorge used to do on 90 Day. Or maybe it's some sort of, I don't know, like selling illegal cable or internet access or something. Because aren't there certain rules in certain countries where you can't have FaceTime or Wi-Fi or something like that? Ji-hoon, you better have a damn good excuse. Moving on to Paul and Karini. Now, I think we are getting really strung along with what went down last night. How much you want to bet Karini, her water broke. I definitely believe that. She's in the hospital. But I think she told Paul, hey, come here. He went in the back. And then she said, go home, go grab my pound puppy, my Beanie Boo collection, and make your way back so you can be here for the birth. But I think Paul wanted Karini's mom to go and get it. Like, I'm the father. I should be here. Your mom should go. Then he blew shit out of proportion, lost his temper. And that's what we're seeing. He's taken it to the extreme, doing the Paul thing that he does and says, oh, well, she doesn't want me there for the birth. Because he didn't go into specifics. He didn't say she told me to go away and not come back. He just said she wants me to go get her stuff and then, I don't know, I guess I'll see what happens. He's playing the shit up for the camera. I think he's going to walk in and Karini is going to try to act her part, you know, where she tries to hide that smile. And then all of a sudden we're going to fast forward to current day where they're all living in that hoarded disaster of an apartment. These two are the worst. Anyone know if they are still in the U.S.? Because there were photos that surfaced of Karini and Paul out at like Walmart. And I don't know if it was just for a trip or if she did get a visa, if his mom sponsored them. I kind of hope they're here in the States just because it's not stable enough down there for them. I don't trust Paul on foreign soil. Selfishly, I'd rather him on foreign soil than here in the U.S., but I don't trust him somewhere else. He's going to get locked up abroad, bring Karini into it, and then they'll be raising little, what's his name? Javier, Pierre, something behind bars. I've seen that happen. I've seen documentaries where they can have kids behind bars and just be raised in prison with their parents. I'm getting way off topic. All right, let's talk about Jenny and Sumit. So Jenny's daughter and her girlfriend showed up and they're going out to dinner tonight. Now, Sumit, I think, misunderstands what Jenny's daughter was saying. I think he was trying to say, yeah, I'll tell my parents basically whatever they want to hear in that moment. I'll leave Jenny. I'm going to choose you. But he will end up choosing Jenny in the end. I think there was some lost in translation things there. But then we see previews for next week. And so help me if we find out that Sumit is leading a double life. Like there's little Sumits running around. He's got a wife and children. I won't be able to take it. I have a feeling it's probably going to be my parents have already betrothed me to someone else and there's someone else, you know, in line to marry him. I get the feeling that's probably what it is. I don't want to see Sumit as being a liar. We can't have our Jenny have her heart broken. We'll swoop in and save her. Jenny, we got your back, girl. All right, Tiffany and Ronald. Now, may I just say, Tiffany is a vision in that turquoisey blue. She's adapted and embraced the colors, and she looks lovely. She's moved away from the blacks and the grays. She's never looked better. And that little Daniel last week, when he found out he was going to be a big brother, I teared up. It made me want to have another child just so I could tell my own kids, but I know my kids would not be as cute as Daniel was. Can you imagine the charm on that little one with Daniel as a big brother? All right. Now, Ronald, on the other hand, he got a rough edit this week. I can't blame him for being pissed off, though. I think anyone, if feeling like they're being treated like a kid and that you're untrustworthy, even though you've worked your ass off, that's enough to make anyone snap. And add on top of that, you get in the car and something that you need is forgotten. That's the worst. Now, he's kind of deserved it because he put Tiffany through a lot, but I can see that being very frustrating, whether you're battling gambling, alcohol, drugs, when you truly are working your butt off and you've proven yourself and people still distrust you. Yes, it goes with the territory, but that's gotta suck. I do think Ronald is being a good guy and he was just pissed off. We've all had those moments where you just lose your goddamn shit. Tiffany handled it pretty damn well. I like that she did not back down. I like that she held her ground in the car and was like, nope, you're not going to talk to me like that. And she's right. She gave up her whole life there. She brought her kid here. She's pregnant. I really like Tiffany. I think the fact that her son is such a good kid, that shows that she's smart and she's emotionally mature. I really enjoy them. They're much better people than I am. Danielle is a much better woman than I'll ever be. Oh, I know that sounded like an insult, but it wasn't. I love the kid. And I also love you guys. Thank you for listening this week. Remember, check out Patreon. That's at patreon.com/realitytvpod. Supports me, supports this show. Please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Really helps us indie podcasters out who are working our little tails off. Head on over to patreon.com/AmandaAndJody for Total Request Podcast. And again, new episode of Moms on the Rocks coming out this week. Catch that on your favorite podcast app. And as always, thank you. Have a great week and stay salty.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.